Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everyone. This is Rachel, and I have crawled straight down the rabbit hole into my little magic studio down here, and I am joined by my penultimate and amazing and wonderful co-host, Carl, this evening. Say hi,
Carl.
Good
evening and salutations, everyone.
And we are going to be talking about something really interesting. We're going to talk about incredibly strange animated children's films. And this is also, just for those of you who are following us, a precursor to a very, very special show we're going to have here in a few weeks. Not going to talk about it yet. I just guess I want to get your goat up for it. So let's go ahead and bust into this thing, Carl.
Yes.
So
go ahead, because you had something you wanted to start with, from what I understand.
I do, and I think that you need to start with it.
Okay.
Well,
hello?
Hello? Hello, come in.
Is something not working?
I'm not sure. I thought we were going to start with...
Well, you know what? The problem is that it started, and then you cut it off, I think. Hold on. We can do this. Just a moment.
I don't know how to play this. I'd like to play everything the Beatles ever recorded. I won't do all of Hey Jude. What are these strings for? When I tell you about the girl I'm seeing now, I met her in Macy's in New York City. She was buying clothes, and I was putting slinkies on the escalators. The girl I'm seeing now, her name is Rachel. She's a very pretty girl. She has emerald eyes and long flowing plaid hair. Last week in August, we went camping way up in Canada. We were laying around in the woods and stuff, and I don't know how she did it, but Rachel got poison ivy on her brain. The only way she could scratch it was if she thought about sandpaper. Rich girl. She's from somewhere else. And her father is an incredible millionaire. You know how he made his money? He's the guy who designed that little diagram that shows you which way to put batteries in something. Hey. Rachel, dear, how I wish you were here. Hey, hey, I can almost see you. Having sex with Rachel is amazing. It's like going to a concert, it really is. She yells a lot. She throws frisbees around the room. When she wants more, she lights a match. Hey, hey, Rachel, dear, how I wish you were here. Hey, hey, I can almost see you.
There we go.
So
that works.
Is it weird that I keep frisbees and matchbooks in my bedside table, or?
It's a little strange.
Anyway, welcome to Down the Rabbit Hole, guys. I am so sorry I screwed that intro up, but we're still working on this, and obviously, I'm Rachel. And if I could, I would totally have plaid-colored hair. But other than that, I wanted to talk about, obviously, animated children's films. And we have had many weeks of discussion about this, and I need the audience to know that we're specifically discussing animated children's films. So I'm sorry if you're coming here for Belladonna of Sadness or maybe, you know, some Akira or anything like that. Exactly. We're just doing children's films today in light of a very special episode that we have coming up that we might be able to talk about later, but I wanted to start with you, Carl, because you are more familiar with some of the earlier animated films for children.
This is true.
Of the ones that I haven't seen all of them. I've seen a few of them, a few of the basics, but nothing like what you had in like the era that you grew up in.
Well, the interesting thing about the era that I grew up in the 60s and 70s, early 70s, was that, you know, you had
to say
this
60s and 70s.
You had this drug thing going on, actually, in a lot of ways. I mean, if you look at the children's shows like Lidsville and H.R. Puff and stuff and the Banana Splits, you know those guys were smoking dope. Without a doubt.
Can I please just make one modern reference?
Yes.
When you say smoking dope, now it means a completely different drug than it did in the 60s and 70s.
Yes, we're talking about marijuana. We're talking about marijuana in my day.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying. I'm just making that reference for some people now. You know, I live in the meth capital.
Understood, because
world.
Things meanings change. Yeah, meanings change.
Yes.
But two of the movies, early films. One was done by Chuck Jones of Warner Brothers fame, and that would be The Phantom Tollbooth. And The Phantom Tollbooth is pretty damn trippy, to say the least.
Shudder.
It's this kid who goes through a magic toll booth in his little car and ends up in the land of mathematics and various things. And it's
strange. Now I know you saw this several times when you were growing up, Rachel, because we were talking about it, and you have a certain reaction to this, which we need to share.
Actually, this is the first time I have ever heard somebody say that it was a movie about a kid who drove into the land of mathematics. And I am sorry, epiphany point right here. Math really, really freaked me out and angered me and confused me growing up until I realized that it wasn't math. It was the way that math was being explained to me. But yeah, for those of you out there listening, the thing that Carl and I have talked about a lot with the Phantom Toll Booth is that it completely traumatized me. I won't say traumatized because I've been legitimately traumatized, but like I could not watch that movie at all. It freaked me out so bad. And I maybe understand that now because Carl just said it was a land of math. And until I got into college and realized that I was good at things like accounting, it doesn't mean that I'm bad at math. It just means that I was bad at understanding the way that it was being taught to me.
Right, exactly.
So you might have just made a break, Carl.
Yeah, and the other thing about it too, of course, it's based on a very famous book, which I read when I was very young. It was published, I think, 62 or 63. So I was like 5 or 6 when I wrote it. It's a wonderful movie, and Chuck Jones does a great job, and it's something I recommend. Now, another one from that era is 1971, and was shown on TV. And the first time it was shown, it was narrated by Dustin Hoffman. Then the next time it was shown, it was narrated by Ringo Starr. And now the version you get, which you can find on YouTube, is narrated by Alan Thicke. And that would be Harry Nilsson's The Point. And this one I love, and I got it. Because I was a kid that was different than everyone else, and I wasn't like everyone else. So Oblio is a young boy who lives in a town where everybody has a pointed head, but he does not. So he wears this hat that's pointed, and he's very good at the sport that everybody loves, and the rich kids don't like the idea that he's different, he's good at it. So they make their parents banish him to the unpointed forest, where he finds out that everything has a point. And then comes back, and magically, he has a pointed head, and everybody else's head is now round. Okay, if that isn't a little trippy, there are drug references all over the place. And it's a wonderful, wonderful fable. Harry Nilsson was a musician and singer and songwriter who came up with this idea and sold it. It's one of the greatest children's movies ever and done for television and then released theatrically afterwards.
And I am in love with that. I really adore children's movies that take the trippy and the weird and make them into a concept that children can understand. And I really think that we're going to talk about a lot of that later when we start getting into some more movies. Honestly, I have a few. I mean, obviously, my earlier ones are not as early as yours, but one of the ones that really shaped my love of animation, and not just because it's beautifully animated, but also that it's got that dark story, is probably The Secret of Nim. And I don't know if you're too familiar with that one.
I'm familiar. Very much so.
Yeah, it's kind of like the tame version of Watership Down, where there's like actually
exactly.
a happy ending.
Exactly, tame version of Watership Down and Plague Dogs, which we're not talking
yes.
about tonight.
No, and I will say that we are not talking about any other animation but children's animation, and we did discuss a lot of things. And so if you guys are hoping for us to discuss certain topics, like certain specific animation studios, wait until our house cleaning at the end of the episode. And if we left out any of your favorites, you might understand why. But beyond that, no. We can't discuss Plague Dogs and things like that because those aren't children's films.
They're not even close.
And that's what you and I discussed earlier, that we need to discuss with people now, is that there's a difference between animation, animated, and animated for children.
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond all of that, once you get into the animated for children category, you really need to understand what is strange for animation for children versus what is just regular and just kind of weird. Because, I mean, frankly, every Disney movie out there is kind of weird. Not every one of them, but a lot of them. Pixar, same thing. DreamWorks, same thing. They all have a bit of strange to them. That's what gets people watching them. But they don't necessarily have that continued weirdness.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's very true. Another one I want to just mention very briefly before we go on after Secret of Nim is a film that came out in 1976, I believe, and it is the Italian version of Fantasia, and it's called Allegro Non Troppo.
Wait, what the fuck?
It's called Allegro Non Troppo.
No, I heard all of the words you said. I'm just trying to process that there's an Italian version of Fantasia that I've never heard about. So please keep talking.
Okay. So very simply, it's this conductor. And it starts out in live animation, as does, by the way, the Phantom Tollbooth. And then it gets really... it goes into animation, and it gets really trippy. It's been years since I've seen it. I saw it in the 80s in New York. But I do remember certain visuals. There's a very, very Randy Elephant, for example. Wonderful things. It's a fun movie. It's not.
So are Randy Elephants a wonderful thing to you normally, or is that just like a this movie kind of thing?
This movie. I'm not that kinky. I'm kinky, but not that kinky.
And that's why we love you.
True. So I just wanted briefly to mention Allegro Non Troppo, too. So we'll pass it back to you, because now we get into the 80s and stuff you grew up with.
Oh, God. Don't remind me of how old I am sometimes.
Oh, listen, I'm twice your age almost.
Well, I know that, and that's why I keep telling you not to remind me. But there's, honest to God, like, so many, and I honestly believe that the 80s were some of the best time for decidedly weird kids movies. And there's a few that I need to look at real quick, because I don't even know which one I want to talk about first. There's a few that I'm specifically not talking about, but let's see what we've got here. I'm so sorry, guys. Actually, Carl, if there's an 80s movie you want to talk about for a second, just let me find my list real quick.
To be honest, not so much. Not so much. I mean, we're not really getting into Bluth that much, or some of the others. There's one I can mention.
The 80s movies. Okay.
There's one I can mention that I think is late 70s, early 80s, and that's The Brave Little Toaster.
Oh, I have that one. I forgot how old that one is. Let me look at it. No, that's definitely, and I have the original Brave Little Toaster, because apparently there's like 5,100 of those.
Yeah, we're talking the original, and it's dark. What a dark
movie. It is. And that is actually something that I was going to talk about tonight, is that the reason that we are, the rule, I guess, that we're going by for considering these children's films incredibly strange is the very adult subject matter that they deal with, but also put it into an understandable context for young children. And I am looking at my actual physical DVD copy of the original Brave Little Toaster. I'm looking on the back for the production notes to see when it was made. God, this print is... Oh, I feel really old right now. This print is really small. 1988! Parents' Choice Television Award. So, yeah. 80s. Definitely. Brave Little Toaster. That was dark as fuck.
Oh,
holy
yeah.
Crap.
That's pretty normal, though, because it's pretty normal in terms of, if you take a look at the old Grimm's fairy tales or you know, any of these folk tales, they were cautionary tales specifically for children, not to go into the woods, not to do this, not to do that. And so, you know, or, you know, Little Red Riding Hood, you're getting into puberty now, and men are going to want to fuck you. You know, I mean, that's
exactly
what it's about.
So, weirdly enough, you guys know I grew up in a strange household that read a bunch of books, and I had a copy of the original Grimm's Fairy Tales. And I just gotta let you know, wow, if those were the fairy tales about Cinderella and the fair-haired child and shit that I was hearing when I was a kid, I would have been a lot better than I was. And I was already pretty good, but wow, there's one, it's in my Grimm's Grimace fairy tales coloring book that I have that talks about, and it's only, you know, two paragraphs, And it's basically like there was a curl with a girl in her hair, and then after that, it's basically like she fucked up, they punished her, and she died a horrible death.
Yeah.
Two paragraphs. That's all it took.
Yeah.
I wish that's all it took to get my kids to get in line.
Yeah, that doesn't work. Sorry. Not these days.
But you know what doesn't work?
What?
Letting them watch incredibly strange cautionary tales about not being a douchebag kid.
Yeah.
Some of which I can say we will get back into the 80s later, I promise, because there's a few that I am reminding myself of. I am sorry, everyone. I can't find my list right now. I made a whole list of amazing shit. But if we want to talk about one of the greatest things about children's animation, is it being a cautionary tale to not be a douchebag? I mean, basically, you can talk about every kid's movie, but there is a studio that is very, very, very close to my heart, and that would be Laika.
Agreed. I love Laika. Seriously.
Okay.
And stop motion to me. Stop motion to me is much more artistic. There's
it
just something
is.
Visually that I find more interesting with stop motion.
And that's the thing, is a lot of times with Laika, they can somehow bridge the gap between stop motion and regular animation so that it feels like an animated movie. There's not that stilted stop motion to it, even though it is a stop motion animated film. But I don't even want to talk about their animation. Let's talk about the fact that they are the ones taking on the incredibly strange children's stories.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, for anybody out there, Laika, they did Coraline, they did Fox Trolls, they did Monster House. Monster House is so cute. Paranorman, yes. And then
my favorite is Kubo and the Two Strings. Freaking love that.
Okay. I consider that part of the Laika Animation Studios, but that one doesn't come up when I'm talking about Laika just because it's like in its own fucking category of GOAT. It's like the greatest of all time. If you have not seen Kubo and the Two Strings, holy cow. That movie and a lot of the other Laika animation movies inspired my eldest child to start researching and learning how to become an animator. And this was like 4 or 5 years ago. They've been working on this project. They want to become an animator for the studio. Because the stories are so strange and appealing and beautiful, like, visually and storytelling-wise.
Mm-hmm. And let's not forget the fact that really it's the characterizations, too. Remember that Laika was the first major studio to feature a gay character.
Yeah.
You know, and things like that. The other thing I do have to mention with Laika is Coraline. Now, I love Coraline the book, which is Neil Gaiman, which is a very, very dark book. And it is a dark movie. It's not as dark as the book. But
no.
There is a section in Coraline that if you need to go to a theater and see it in 3D, there is that garden section that absolutely just blew me away when I saw it in 3D. Seriously.
Oh, can I tell you something beautiful about that movie? In that particular scene, it's relevant to that particular scene. Okay, so one of my favorite artists, somebody that we talked about earlier to each other, today even,
okay.
Do you know who the voice of the father in Coraline is?
What is his name? He's from They Might Be Giants.
Yes, you got that part. It's Jonathan Colton. Yes, Jonathan Colton is the voice of the father. So all of the crazy, amazing singing that they do in that movie is gorgeous. But I also want you to know, everybody out there listening, that this is a show more about, like, animated things. And, yes, the voice actors really make the animation. But I want to say that Coraline is a claymation film, and my eldest child, the new graphic designer and whatnot, had let me know a few years ago that they had over 1,000 facial expressions that they designed out of their clay for Coraline in that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, the work that's put into this type of animation is so exact and exacting that it takes a long, long time to do a stop motion film, much longer than regular animation. And that's one of the reasons let me finish. That's one of the reasons I love stop motion, because you can see the artistry right there and just be amazed by it. Okay, over to you.
Well, thanks. So my favorite part of the movie, Box Trolls, which is another Leica animation, and you can typically find it in a 3DVD set. It comes with Box Trolls, Paranorman, and Coraline, three of the greatest, incredibly weird animated kids films of all time. But one of the greatest things about Box Trolls is that if you watch any of the cut scenes, the credit cut scenes, I guess, what is that, post? Credit bumps?
Right. Yeah,
post-credit bumps. If you watch the post-credit bump on Box Trolls, it shows you a time lapse of them making one of the best scenes in the movie, but it's like a many days time lapse, and it's showing you, like, it's just a camera, obviously, and the guy's seeing all the things, and holy cow. And it shows you how long it took to make a 10-second scene in claymation in a mostly animated movie. And the fact that there's people in the world that are so into this, that make it so exquisite and perfect that you can't even tell that these movies are fucking claymation for the most part. I'm sorry, but that is glorious to me.
Okay, and one other quick shout-out for me and Coraline. You talked about the voice actors. Ian McShane and Keith David as the cat. God bless. Seriously. Great voice acting, everything.
Absolutely. And that's the thing that I wasn't talking about, because you know how I feel about voice actors, so.
Right. Right. Very much so. So talk a little bit about Kubo. Tell them why Kubo is, like, so great.
Well, I mean, I have to say that being the person on this podcast that actually has kids, I have to watch a lot of children's films, even though I don't want to. Holy cow, I've seen so much Peppa Pig and Puppy Dog Pals in the past 2 days that I'm probably going to stab myself in the eye with an ice pick and induce a lobotomy.
Yeah.
But there are certain redeeming factors of children's media fare, one of which is Kubo and the Two Strings. And this is a glorious movie that's animated almost in the style of Samurai Jack. Weird thing about Samurai Jack being that it was the first time that a cartoon had ever been animated without the black lines surrounding everything. It's very much in the style of Samurai Jack, and it's very much in the Eastern / Asian sense of, well, just history.
Well, it's based on a Japanese folktale. It's based on a Japanese folktale about a young boy who finds a magic lyre and goes on from there. I've only seen it. I only saw it when it first came out. But I was just blown away by it.
You need to explain maybe what a liar is to certain people who are not.
Well, basically, a liar is a type of musical instruments. In this case, the Japanese lyre only has two strings, whereas a guitar would have six. Mandolin has double.
It's like a Japanese dulcimer.
Yeah.
So, and he has the ability to play his lyre, his two strings, and also create living origami.
Right. And of course, the whole thing is, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
The whole thing, too, is also, he's searching for his father. And that's always part for everyone, actually. But he is, you know, this is all about the quest, and which is a very big part of folk tales, particularly Eastern and Eastern European.
I agree with that. Right. I grew up with a lot of the Eastern and the Eastern European and the Eastern Asian stuff. And one of the reasons that this is incredibly strange is because it stuck so hard to the actual stories and the religion of things. And it was so beautiful. I mean, yay, everybody loves that lovely Mouse Company movie about the girl who becomes a warrior, but this is actually
Yeah, that would be brave. Yeah, and this came out this came out the same year as Enchanted. And I'm sorry, I like Enchanted, but Kubo should have won the Oscar. There's no doubt it was the best animated film of the year. At least in my
absolutely.
Mind.
Oh, absolutely. And I loved that movie more than anything. And I actually saw that around the same time as the movie that I'm only going to mention the name of. I'm not going to get into because, well, it sounds real bad. But I was recommended this animated movie by an 11-year-old child. And that is why I consider it a children's movie, and that they deal with it in the way that children can process and accept. But My Life as a Zucchini, originally a French children's animated film, and I will just say that, wow, a movie that involves the accidental murder of the alcoholic mother by their young son, and then the rest of his life through a children's home, and dealing with the other children in the children's home that have very life issues other than I just accidentally murdered my alcoholic mom, and they're like, yeah, well, you know. So it's a really harsh movie, but it's a beautiful movie, which is something that a lot of the most incredibly strange and wonderful children's movies all seem to share, is that they're harsh and beautiful at the same time. And I sometimes feel like that they're harsh to us as adults because we want to protect our children from those things that we have inevitably dealt with. And that's what makes them strange children's films, is not that it's so strange. It's that it's hard for us as adults to process how we've been shown this story.
Well, you know, part of that too is, you know, as you forget being a child when you grow older. You forget that sense of acceptance and that sense of wonder. And I think that's part of it too. Now, since we're talking about a French film, I want to just do a quick shout out for a film, 2009. And it's called A Town Called Panic. And basically in this animated film, you've got three friends, cowboy and Indian, and they plan to, it's horse's birthday. So they're going to build a barbecue pit. But they ordered way too many bricks. And then the bricks are being stolen by these bad guys that live in the center of the earth. And it gets even stranger than that. But this one's a much lighter film. It's also done by the same people who did The Triplets of Belleville about 5 or 6 years later. If we're talking about French animated films, you should check out A Town Called Panic, or Panique à Village, actually. And there's lots of Marx Brothers and Three Stooges in it, and a lot of that type of comedy. But it's fun.
Okay. And I mean, if we really need to, I will keep talking about French animation. And this is one that I did not bring up to you earlier. It's one of my favorites. And holy shit, suddenly I forgot the name. I will tell you what's on Netflix. It's animated. It's about a giant bug that starts singing in French and in France. Give me 2 seconds, guys. So, Carl, you talk about a thing.
Okay, so we were talking about Kubo and the Two Strings.
Yeah.
I wanted to also go, it's, we could argue whether or not this is a children's movie. I think it is. But it's certainly adult in nature, too. And that would be Isle of Dogs, which is Wes Anderson. Also stop motion. And he also did the Fantastic Mr. Fox, which is very good. But I prefer Isle of Dogs. I absolutely love that.
But
yeah.
Yeah. No, I do not feel like the Isle of Dogs is a kid's movie, because my 11-year-old, who watches and loves really weird, like, actually they're about to be 12, and they also watch and love really, really strange adult stuff with me, that one. We saw a preview for it one of the very rare times I've taken them out to a movie. So we saw a preview for it, and they wanted to see it, kind of. And then when it finally came out on Amazon, we watched it, and they were like, I'm sorry. I didn't want to see that.
Well, you know, it's funny.
Yeah? It's funny?
I was just going to say it's funny. It is not something I would recommend for a young kid. I think they'd have to be, you know, 11, 12, 13, 14. For that film.
Okay.
But it's,
well, once they get to that age, I don't even feel like they're a kid. But yeah, keep going.
But because it gets into politics, it gets into a number of things. It's also sort of science fiction, and it's all about a virus. And guess what we're going through right now? You know, so it's it also to me, it's very, very much, even though it's written and directed by Wes Anderson, very Caucasian director, I feel it's very, very respectful of the Japanese culture. And I think it reflects the Japanese culture rather well. And for that reason alone, I think people should watch it. You know, again, it's not something that your 3-year-old is going to want to watch. But, you know, if you've got kids, you know, 6th, 7th grade, yeah, absolutely.
Well, exactly. And by the way, the movie that I was just talking about is called A Monster in Paris. And it is glorious. And if you want to see a really weird movie that is also animated, a very definitively children's film, and also has some of the best music I've heard in my life, like, I usually at least once a week have to play La Scène.
Nice.
It is wonderful. It is about spoiler alert here, guys, but it's not going to spoil the movie for you, just a little spoiler on the initial surprise. It's about a giant flea. As in,
nice.
A larger than man-sized flea who ultimately puts on a disguise and sings in a French bordello for a while.
I like it.
And it's a children's movie, and again, okay, I have to look this up. I'm pretty sure it is Warren Zevon's son who is the lead singer who plays the flea. And just so anybody wants to know, Vanessa Paradis sings. She's the main character, the main voice actress in the movie. So it's gorgeous. And again, it's totally a kids movie because my kids love it. So
yeah.
Let me look at this and figure out who the flea is. So, Carl, you have a few more that you want to talk to about or talk to us about.
Well, there's a number of them. I think I'm going to go with one right now that we both love. It's relatively recent. It's in the 2010s somewhere. And it's a fun movie. It's not dark, even though it has horror elements to it. And the film is called Igor. And
oh.
I love this movie. I absolutely friggin' adore it. It is just so odd. And the best way I can describe it is to describe two characters. You have Brian, who is a brain in a jar with dyslexia. That's why he's called Brian. And the other one is this existential, suicidal cat who is immortal, voiced by Steve Buscemi, who keeps trying to kill himself by suicide. And it doesn't work. Not only that, you have John Cusack as an Igor to an evil scientist, and they have this contest, all the evil scientists of this land try to put out the most evil thing, and then, of course, then they blackmail the rest of the world. So that's how they make their money. But he makes this giant Lady Frankenstein, who then is brainwashed by James Lipton to be, and she wants to play Annie in a Little Orphan Annie in Annie and sing Tomorrow. But not only that, then you have the blind kids from the blind school tap dancing to I Can See Clearly Now. Definitely not PC. This is not PC. The voice talent is absolutely fantastic. John Cusack, John Cleese, Eddie Izzard, who else is in it? Jay Leno, Christian Slater, Catherine O'Hara. It's just absolutely
glorious. I mean, it sounds like the best thing I've ever heard, but that's just me.
Well, you've seen this, right? We talked about this. You know this movie, right?
One more time, give me the name of the movie.
Igor.
Okay, so that's why I'm confused. No, I have not seen Igor the movie, but I know that there is an Igor show. And that's where I got off with you earlier, going on. There's a show, and it is not a show that I normally like because it doesn't say anything. It just relies on the visual humor. And Igor is one of the best shows I've ever seen, but I've also learned that most of the foreign cartoons are way better. Like,
yeah,
we won't even get...
I don't think it's the same thing. I don't think it's the same thing. Because this was an American film. It was just the animation was farmed out to Czechoslovakia. But it was financed American. So I don't think it's the same thing.
Okay, well, I'm going to look this up real quick and just see if it's the same thing. Igor, 2008 film. But either way, we've got some other films in that same vein of, you know, kind of weird, not talking a lot. And one of the ones that we really have to discuss before we get off tonight is definitely the movie Nine.
Oh, without a doubt.
And
love that movie.
That, me too. Kids do as well. That one actually started out as a short film for a college project that got taken into this giant Hollywood project. And I'm glad that it did. I really am, because it is such a dark and fun and really sad movie.
Yeah, I remember when Christopher Plummer died, because he has a small role in this. I mentioned this specifically, this movie, that I love it. It was originally short film, but everybody involved in it, and it's just so unique. The visualization of the rag dolls, and the idea that you know, it's post-apocalyptic, and it's dark. It's definitely very, very dark.
Well,
it's,
I mean, you already know how I feel about post-apocalyptic things. It's kind of my cup of tea. So the fact that I don't explain to my kids or tell them, you know, how much I love movies before I show them to them. So because I'm trying to get an actual reaction about how they like it. Nine is one of the ones that I initially did not feel like my kids were going to like.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one that we keep having to put in the DVD player. So.
Well, that's the wonderful thing about kids, because we underestimate them. You know,
we do.
In terms of what they like, you know, you need to show them stuff and see what they like and let them form their own opinions. You know, don't try to you know, I mean, you want to shield kids. I'm not disagreeing with that. But you got to give them some leeway, too.
Well, exactly.
Seriously.
And I actually started showing my children weirder animated films after I realized, when I had my first child, who is 7 years different from the youngest child, I didn't intend to, but they fell asleep on my lap and I watched Gremlins, actually, and I thought they fell asleep on my lap, but they didn't, and they watched the whole movie at 4 years old, and I thought that was going to freak them out, and it didn't. They were like, I want to see more Gremlin movie.
Yeah.
And that's where I realized that maybe our kids are capable of understanding more than we give them credit for. And that's why I love these incredibly strange animated films. And, I mean, we haven't even gotten into yet. Like, we can talk about the rest of Leica animation. I mean, those guys. Seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's been so much. I mean, I honestly, make me sound like a really horrible human, but I didn't first see The Last Unicorn until I was in my 30s.
I didn't see it until like about 10 years ago. So, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't actually see it. Like, I know that we rented it from a Blockbuster. Oh, I didn't say that. I didn't age myself like that. Blockbuster. As a teenager, because one of my teenage friends told me about having seen it as a kid and freaking out because they said the word damn and hell. And, like, I don't know if this is a kid's movie because they're cussing in it. Obviously, I own the extensive director's DVD edition of that movie now. And my kids have all watched it and loved it. Although I'm a little disappointed because the almost four-year-old this afternoon told me specifically that they did not want to watch that movie.
Aww.
She's her daddy's child. I'm sorry.
Oh, that
yeah.
Happens.
I really think that, like, what we were bringing up earlier, the reason that we all seem to think that these are incredibly strange for children is because of the fact that they are dealing with such adult content.
And as we said, you know, that's actually very common. It really is.
And it should be more common. Unpopular opinion here.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh. That's why you're my new bestie.
But I want to bring up one other, since we're talking about, you know, this type of thing. And I'm just going to bring it up briefly because I know I'm going to do a show particularly on this animator. But we have a guy by the name of Ralph Bakshi. And he decided after doing several adult animated films that he wanted to do his children's movie. And he did. And it's rated PG. I think it should be rated R, but that's me. But nonetheless, you got to give a nod out to Wizards. You really do. You know, and we were talking, and when we were bringing up, when I was bringing up the 70s movies at the beginning of the podcast, I decided, should I talk about it or not? But you know what? For what it is, it has some dark subject matter. It's got, you know, the main female is big-breasted in a see-through negligee throughout most of the movie, and various things. But nonetheless, you know, it brings up the idea that if you have a certain perspective as an artist, that you may consider something a children's movie and most people won't, because it's a children's movie in your mind. And that's sort of why I want to bring it up, because both you and I, Rachel, you know, believe very strongly that kids can't get through this stuff, and they're very resilient, and they just need guidance. And if you, you know, do any of these films with your kids, talk to them about it. You know, communicate, because that's what your kid wants to do. He wants to know what you think. You would agree with that? Rachel? Oh, my goodness. I think we may have lost her. Just a moment. Just a moment. There she is. We got her. You with us, Rach?
Did you unmute me?
Yes, I did. Did you at least listen to my little screed there? Did you hear
it? No, I only heard the very last few seconds. I did get raptured.
It happens. And the problem is my studio is on the other side of the room right now. So
no,
that's my
that
fault.
No, okay. So I heard the last end of your rant, and I will say that yes, I completely agree. Children are not as delicate as a lot of people want to think that they are. I have two incredibly well-adjusted children, one of which is almost 4, one of which is almost 12, who watch these things and ask me questions about them. And I don't try to sugarcoat it. I tell them the truth. I mean, I do tell them in a nice way, but I don't tell them, like, that our puppy that died went to heaven. I tell them that our puppy is not coming back, and hopefully that it went to a better place. But children are surprisingly way more perceptive than most people give them the opportunity to be.
Agreed.
My child's grandmother was recently coming to me and calling me and bawling on the phone saying, "They're just a kid, and why are people talking to them about this?" And it was literally just about, you know, people just want to be who they are. It's cool. That's the only words that were said. So, yeah. Kids are way more capable of understanding. There was a lot of other background stuff involving, you know, other people and things that I will not speak about on the air. But kids are a lot more capable of understanding than what most people give them credit for. And
absolutely.
Most people don't understand that because they won't just look at someone that they see as a quote unquote kid and say, "Hey, how do you feel about things?"
Yeah.
And that's...
No, I think that's very, very true. I've found it over the years with what I do as a music director for children's choirs and so on and so forth. Don't underestimate them.
Exactly.
They're a lot smarter than
no.
you think they are.
They are, and they're a lot more capable of understanding and, I guess, accepting.
Mm-hmm.
The really fucked up things that happen in the world.
Yeah.
Because I would never have known, and I think maybe the quarantine has helped me understand this. I would never have known how understanding of the fucked up things in the world that are happening that my kid would be. Like, I did not realize that my eldest, you know, the one that has the actual, at least basic concept of the world right now, because the other one's not even 4 yet, so they still laid in the floor screaming about, "I love stuff. Why are you putting stuff away?" They have so much more capacity.
Never do. You do. So what other movies do you want to mention?
Well, we've talked about a lot of movies, Carl.
This is true.
I mean, I have like 30,000 more I could go through. So are there any you want to talk about?
There might be a number two. There might be a second podcast on this one, I think, in the future.
There might have to.
I do want to mention at least one more, okay? And this goes back to my background. I grew up in the 60s. Saturday morning was the Bugs Bunny show. And, you know, you can't get more subversive than Bugs Bunny. I'm sorry. But the one, you know, and Space Jam is coming out. The second Space Jam is coming out soon and that sort of thing. And we're used to Bugs Bunny. But the one movie that I think we really need to mention is the Bugs Bunny movie Back in Action, which was done in the late 2000s, directed by Joe Dante. And it is absolutely one of the most subversive, crazy adaptations I've ever seen. There is a scene in the Louvre Museum, which is priceless. Also, it's basically a Daffy Duck movie, which to me, Daffy Duck is my favorite character and always has been. The reason for that is that Chuck Jones at one time said, you know, everyone wants to be Bugs Bunny, but we're all Daffy Duck. And so I just wondered if you've ever seen Back in Action.
I actually have, and do you want to know why I have seen Back in Action?
Okay.
Same reason I am starting to try and make the Down the Rabbit Hole podcast is because I go down the fucking rabbit hole. So when I was young and maybe in some daycare days, when the Looney Tunes, the basketball movie, we just talked about it.
Space Jam.
Yes, when Space Jam came out, it was relevant to me, like really relevant. And so after that, I tried to figure out if there was anything beyond that. And yes, I have seen all of the Space Jam movies because there's more than one. And
well,
there's
more than one now.
Well, yeah, I know. Now. And there's some Looney Tunes action movies, like Looney Tunes Are Back and Looney Tunes Are Back in Action.
Yeah, good and stuff.
Yeah. I was not the hugest fan of Looney Tunes, although I do have a few favorites. But that is going to have to go to the children's animated show, because
yep,
there are so many.
Well, for me, I grew up with them. I mean, there are three reasons, but there are three reasons that my humor is why it is. One is the Marx Brothers, the other one is Rocky and Bullwinkle, and the third one is the Looney Tunes. It was such a great influence on me. And Back in Action is actually considered the weakest of the films. But to me, it's the best because it's the one where it just goes absolutely nuts. It's anarchy. All that is anarchy. It's always anarchy. And that's a great thing.
Were the kids voting on that movie or were the adults voting on that movie?
The adults.
Exactly. Case closed.
Yep. But that's what it is. It's what
because
it is.
It is, and I have to say that I've always loved the weird animated shit, and for all of our listeners out there, if we have forgotten, we have not forgotten. We have multiple shows coming up here in the future of, well, different types of animation and different directorial studios. So if we have forgotten anything, we haven't actually forgotten. We're just waiting.
Yes, exactly.
But, yeah, like, question we have to ask is, A, why do we feel it's incredibly strange? And B, why do we not like these films so much? And I personally have to ask that because I have kids, and even though they have, I don't even have a smart TV in the rest of my house. They have a smart TV in their bedroom with, like, every fucking toy they could ever want to play with, and they don't care. They want to watch shows out there with me. So we have to ask, why is it that these are incredibly strange and why are they children's shows? Why do my kids want to come out here with me and watch these movies and things with me? And I think that it's because maybe it helps them in the kid way connect with the adults and what they're doing. I mean, some of the greatest, weirdest ones, and I am loath to admit this. I am about to lose, like, every follower we've ever had, if we've ever had a follower. But I'm going to tell you that the Hotel Transylvania movies, Hotel Transylvania, yes.
Are you there? Goodness, she is being
absolutely, yep, we've lost her. Hopefully we'll get her back.
Block Talk is being a pain today.
So, at this point, we've got 40 minutes left. Rachel, if you're listening or trying to call back in, I think at this point what we're going to do is going to call it a night. Now, we talked earlier about the point, so I'm just going to end this up with a song from the point by Harry Nilsson, and that would be Me and My Arrow. All right, so here we go.
Taking the high. got just to break out, I'll carry on. Oh yes I will. Me and my road, taking the high road. Wherever we go, everyone knows it's me and my arrow. Me and my
Lobo of podcasts. Lobo.
Hello.
Bad guy.
So I found a way to pass the time. I played a song.
I know. Well, Lobo is the bad guy from comic book history that got sent to hell after he finally died, and hell couldn't do anything with him, so they sent him back to the Earth, and then Earth couldn't do anything with him, and hell wouldn't take him, and so they sent him back to hell, and hell couldn't take him because he took over hell. So that's what's happening right now. I'm just being raptured back and forth.
Yes, you are Gilgamesh.
Yes. Apparently nobody can take me, and fuck Gilgamesh, I'm Lobo, because he totally has some awesome thigh-high boots and chains wrapped around himself. I think that's a way better aesthetic than Gilgamesh.
Okay. Okay, so any final things before
we...
Housekeeping, yeah, we could talk about housekeeping. So do you want to talk about your upcoming shows that you're planning?
I do. So I have confirmed, and so I'm not going to say any names yet because we don't have the date confirmed, but I do have the reason that we did this podcast today on animated films is because I may or may not have a couple of very big name Don Bluth, Hanna-Barbera, Disney animators may or may not have responsible for some really big Disney and Don Bluth film animation coming to talk to us in the next few weeks. which is why we wanted to talk about incredibly strange animated films today. And I'm also going to be on a podcast on Friday. And are you going to be part of that, Carl?
No, I will not be part of that. But you will be.
Okay. I will. I am going to be guest hosting on a podcast later this week on Friday, I believe. That
right.
is going to be mainly focusing on Studio Ghibli animation. And I am forgetting the name of the other director right now.
I will tell you right now. It's Miyazaki. And
Miyazaki and Ghibli.
Right. And it's actually Adam's show, Adam Ferenc. And he will be talking about Studio Ghibli on his Cathode Ray Mation. Okay?
Yes.
And don't forget, you're a busy girl this week. Because on Saturday, you're going to join me and Doc for the first of many, many Carl's Caverns commentary watches. We will be partnering with ISF because watch parties are going bye-bye. And we're going to be starting a whole series. And my series are going to be on hidden 70s gems. And we are going to be doing a film called Deadly Hero, which is available on Amazon. So you can just cue the film on Amazon and then join us either live Saturday afternoon at 3, or you can just check the link and watch it anytime. And that's what we're going to do on the commentary watches.
And
also,
by watch
week,
it anytime, we mean that we are going to tell you which services you can find the media for free so that you can,
absolutely,
at any point you want to, come and join the watch party and watch the movie on whatever service you're available to get it. And
listen to our commentary watch, just like you were listening to a commentary on a DVD. And that's
exactly.
What we're going to do. And that's going to be a weekly series. I'm going to be focusing on 70s films. Doc will be focusing on sexploitation 60s and 70s. And of course, Rachel, you're welcome to join us. And whatever you want to do, we'll get it in there. And I'm sure that some of the ISF people also will join us. David Weddington,
oh, you,
and Kimberly.
You know I will get in on a commentary watch. Like,
yeah, but you get to
podcast.
Choose one too, you know. You get to choose stuff
and
too.
I might. I know. I'm announcing right now.
Oh.
A month from today, we're going,
yes,
to do a commentary watch on Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story.
Okay, we can do that. Absolutely. I know you love that film. I know you love that
film. I know
you
do.
Need to watch it.
And you know that it's an incredibly strange film.
Yes, this is true. And of course, we will try to keep that with everything we do. Now,
yes,
as far as the ISF podcast, we,
yes,
had to we are rescheduling Tony Burgess, and that's going to do a Zoom, and more than likely that'll be on my screens, which is our sort of sister YouTube channel. Also, but we have many others coming, including next Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, a week from yesterday, will be Joel Weinkoop.
I love
fun.
That guy.
You know, we also have Ted Nicolau coming. We've got I just heard from Mark Savage. He's got a new movie coming out. All these things are coming out post-COVID now. which is good. So we have lots of people planned.
Can we say that it's
and
not
May
post-COVID?
Yeah, and May we got a regional filmmaker, Joe Lemieux. We also have Joe Lansdale coming at the end of May. But we're getting booked, man. And people are out there now promoting their stuff because now things are getting back into production and post-production and things are getting released. So absolutely, we've got all sorts of stuff coming. So keep with us on Deviant Legion. We want to thank everyone for listening. And I'm sorry, Rachel, you got raptured twice.
Twice, you motherfucker.
It happened to me too, twice in the show. So, actually, three times once. So, you know, it happens. But anyway, Rachel, why don't you take us out?
Well, I hope that you guys have a great rest of your night. And I had some glorious things planned, but my brain got space-brained by being raptured. So I just want everybody to maybe think about some of these gloriously animated films that they never thought about watching before. And seriously consider them as an adult. They're glorious. They're amazing. They're beautiful. And, oh, I love your face. You have been the best co-host ever, always, ever. And I only say co-host because this is, like, the third time we've done this show. But you're actually the best host and producer and friend I know. So let's say goodbye to everybody and good night. And
absolutely. And thank you very much for joining us. Good night, everyone.
Good
As
night,
the plane
guys.
Goes by my house, it happens. Yeah. This is what happens when you live near Kennedy Airport. All right. Good night, everyone.
Makes no force airs. So, yep. Good night, guys. Goodbye.